It is hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. We pick out the stems and seeds at 2:45. Naomi Osaka loses at the Olympics, and she talked with reporters about it afterward. At 2:30, why does July 27th matter? How about Chicken Finger Day? And in mere minutes, we're talking Texas and OU to the SEC with the great Bobby Burton of Inside Texas. I'm Trey Ellings. Sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
In all of this trying to lose weight and trying to keep it off, Trey, I've yet to find the chicken finger that's good for me. Have you found one of those yet? Is there a chicken tender out there that's good for me? Not the skinless, boneless, grilled kind. I know that's good for me. But I'm saying, can I get a fried chicken tender that's actually good for me? Does it exist?
No.
God, I wish there was one.
No.
I'd take that for a day. Remember the other day we were talking about one thing for a day? Woo, give me a chicken finger day where none of it hurts me. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you remember the chicken fingers that they used to serve up in public school?
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day?
Yeah,
where it was
yeah.
like part steak, part chicken finger, it seemed like. I guess it was mostly dark meat.
It's kind of a transformer of food, really. It was a lot of different things at once.
It kind of is, but it was like it was flat, but it also had like kind of an oval shape to it, too. It was the most unique looking chicken finger, and it was delicious, too.
It was. Oh, you're right. Those were tasty. All right, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline. It is official. You can say there are not formal things in the SEC, but you'd be wrong because Oklahoma and Texas have formally notified the conference. They are seeking an invitation, and now we'll find out what happens. Let's talk to Bobby Burton of Inside Texas. Go to InsideTexas.com for the very latest on all of this, on recruiting, and all the stuff that Bobby's been covering for a few years. Bobby, how are you?
Good, Chad, Trey. How y'all doing?
Man, we're doing well. I'm so glad to talk to you today. You have been doing this for a minute or two. Did you ever dream that you would be discussing these things and on to be on the precipice of Texas entering the SEC?
You know, truth be told, yes. But not this week or not last week, per se. I mean, when conference realignment came along last time, Texas, you know, stayed away from the SEC, in particular because Mack Brown and Bill Powers did not, and DeLost Dawes to a degree, did not think it was the right fit for Texas because of what they thought or perceived as potential illegal recruiting tactics, be that true or not. That's why Texas didn't go there. In the years interceding, I think that Texas has become more interested in the SEC. The profile of the conference itself has gained notoriety and gained traction. It's one of those situations where, you know, people were talking about the Big Ten or the Pac-12 or the ACC. Well, the SEC was the one that always was probably the most most sexy, I guess, is the best way to put it, when it comes to what Texas wanted to do, I think.
Bobby, do you think that assuming we see the Power Five turn into a Super Four over the next few years as the college football playoff expands and we get more natural and true-on separation between the Power Five and the Group of Five schools, that the best fit for Texas, if the Big 12 was going to dissolve over the other three conferences, would be the SEC at this point, considering some of the changes with NIL to where that under-the-table stuff, a lot of that is now over the table too?
Yeah, exactly. And I think was probably – not that Texas was stuck on that, but that was probably the final shoe to drop in what made Texas very comfortable and others – around Texas, very comfortable about making the move to the SEC, was the NIL. But this was in play before that ruling became apparent back in June, and late June from the Supreme Court. So it played a role, but I don't want to speak to how much. I think that as I look forward and having talked to some people at Texas at very high levels, you know, they're not necessarily looking at, okay, what's this all going to look like? Is it going to be four conferences? Is it going to be two leagues nationwide? Is it going to be six and there's 16-team playoff? They just felt and wanted to go as far as saying, okay, let's hitch our wagon to the SEC, in part because they felt they were partners that would reward Texas and Oklahoma to a level that they deserve to be, as opposed to potentially weighing down Texas financially long term.
Talking with Bobby Burton of Inside Texas. Obviously, Bobby, a lot of what you have done over the years is cover recruiting like probably nobody else. Talk to me about the living room in recruiting. How much does this change the dynamics when it comes to Texas, Oklahoma, and the SEC, or does it change it for you?
Oh, it does. I mean, it's not so much Texas and Oklahoma and how they pitch themselves, although I think that obviously the SEC will be part of it. Texas A&M, and this doesn't count for the out-of-state piece of what Texas A&M does, but Texas A&M in the state of Texas has sold the SEC as the be-all, end-all, and that they're the only place for players from the state of Texas to play at home and stay in state and play in the nation's toughest conference. Be that true or not, it has resonated heavily with a lot of recruits. And so I think that the Aggies are going to have to change a little bit of how they approach it. It's not insurmountable or anything for them, but it will absolutely change that from a Texas and OU standpoint. I mean, Oklahoma does so much national recruiting right now that I think that playing in the SEC again will be very appealing. And with Texas, the primary thing that people will use against Texas was the Big 12. It wasn't even Texas's results many of the past years, because Texas still has a great deal of tradition and a great academic situation, as well as a alumni base that is as powerful as any in the country. So what Texas sells from that standpoint kind of changes with Steve Sarkisian because of who he is on offense, but more so it changes with a new conference and what they will bring to that conference and who they're going to be.
There's a bit of posturing going on right now, Bobby, with regards to the media rights for the Big 12 running out in 2025. Everybody's playing nice, everybody's being courteous, but it seems far-fetched that the Big 12 will continue to exist for another 4 years. In your best estimate, when do you think Texas and Oklahoma will be playing conference games in the Southeastern Conference?
So first of all, before that's the million-dollar question, or the multi-million-dollar question. I would say posturing is the right word there, right? Because anybody that definitively says, "Oh, Texas won't move," or "Oh, you won't move until 2025," they said so, or the Big 12 said, "Oh, we're going to hold their feet to the fire until 2025." That's not reality. Reality is these things get litigated or negotiated out long prior to that. I would put it as greater than 50-50 odds that Texas is playing the SEC in 2022. Is that for sure? No, it's not. Would I maybe place a bet on it? Yeah, I might. So I feel like nobody has the absolute answer. I do know that Texas has some pieces in its favor. With the Longhorn Network, for example, and the SEC Network being part of ESPN, there's some dollars there that might flow that Texas doesn't have to worry about or that ESPN may be able to pick up. And so there's a lot of moving parts, and I don't think Texas fully knows where it's going to end up quite yet. I don't think Oklahoma does. I don't think the SEC does, nor do I think the Big 12. So likely, but not for sure.
And I mean, to me, as you're talking there, Bobby, I'm thinking about this may be the first time it's happened in college athletics, but if you've got every lawyer, booster, amount of money, power play, if you've got all of that of Texas, Oklahoma, and the SEC all trying to get the same thing, I mean, there's no way we get close to 2025 on this thing, right?
No, I don't see that happening. And nor do I think Texas would enter into this with the legitimate thought that it's going to be 2025.
Yeah.
I think that it would be too soon to pull the trigger on that. Right. And so that being said, you know, there's still some meat left on the bone there to figure out exactly how it's going to work. I'm sure people are working on it. Right. I know people are working on those kind of things right now.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is until it happens, there will be a lot of scuttlebutt and that sort of thing. But until it actually is agreed to on all sides, you know, it's just going to be hearsay at this point.
Talking to Bobby Burton of Inside Texas. All right, Bobby, let's get to this SEC vote. When they get to that moment for the SEC vote, A, do you think A&M will vote no? B, if they do, would you blame them? And C, do you think anybody else would vote no?
Do I think A&M will vote no? I don't think A&M will vote no, because I think that financially it is prudent for them to vote yes. They have a lot of debt. A lot of universities do, so it's not something that's just specific to them in their athletic department. So that's one part of it. Second part is what was the second question? How many
If they voted no, would you blame them?
No, I would not. I mean, I think that I actually, if I understand some of the angst A&M fans are feeling, right? Because if you look at it from a big picture perspective, they have leveraged the SEC is, we're the only school in the SEC in the state of Texas. They have a leveraged bat to some success. I mean, they just won the Orange Bowl, so they're excited about that. Yeah. Their football program looks like it's going in the right direction. So to upset the apple cart now, just when they feel like they've got, I mean, the Manziel era was interesting, but it wasn't necessarily sustainable, and that's why they let go of Sumlin. With Fisher, it looks like they've got their sea legs, you know? Mm-hmm. And so to come in now and say, you're going to spring it on me now, right when I think I got it righted, it is a little different.
Yeah, and in terms of any other teams that you think might vote no, does anybody else have a reason to say no?
Well, I think Missouri's AD just stepped down this week. Don't know if y'all heard that or not, but I don't know that it certainly didn't have anything to do with this situation, but Missouri was rumored to be one of those. But again, the money talks. How can a school like Missouri potentially turn down an additional $16 million a year the additions of Texas and Oklahoma might bring? You also talk about Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina being potential no votes because they are the only school in the SEC in their states, and they would somehow be compassionate about the Aggies and their desire to be the lone school in their state. The only problem with that is, and there was even talk that the former president of A&M said there was a gentleman's agreement, but the only problem with that is Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina are founding, not South Carolina, but Florida and Georgia are founding members of the SEC. They're a little bit differently situated than A&M, despite being a full member. It's just a little different situation.
Yep.
One of the most interesting questions surrounding this move, Bobby, is what happens with the rest of the Big 12? Inevitably, somebody's going to get left out of the Power 5 discussion, unfortunately. So what's your best guess on where Texas Tech, Baylor, and TCU end up?
My best guess is they are not in they are still in the Big 12 and some remade version of the Big 12, because I don't know that the Pac-12 is going to take them. I really feel that Baylor would be a hard pull for the Pac-12 based on the fact that they've stayed away from religious schools and BYU when BYU clearly wanted to join the Pac-12 before. Texas Tech is not necessarily in line with academically yet with the folks at UC Berkeley or UCLA or Washington or Stanford or USC. And those four schools, those four California schools, certainly are the apple of the Pac-12 eye. I mean, they really are the center point. And so, and then TCU, I just don't know. I mean, I think the best case scenario would be the Pac-12 for all of them. Mm. I don't know that that's going to happen. Mm. The one thing I will say about this, and this is not enough people are talking about it, is that the Pac-12 needs an 11 o'clock central kickoff time.
Agreed. Yeah.
To maximize their value financially. George Kliakoff is a guy I've known for 20 plus years. He used to be one of the business executives at MLB Advanced Media when we did some work with them a long time ago. And he's a very astute guy. He helped launch Hulu, for example.
Wow.
And he will, he's only been on the job, I think, for a couple weeks, but he will eventually get there about where the Pac-12 absolutely needs to be. I think that the Pac-12, however, might be able to create some interleague play with the Big Ten to get that 11 o'clock start too. So where does Oklahoma State or Tech or Baylor or TCU fit in if the Pac-12 and the Big Ten were to do some sort of interleague play throughout the year and not just be league play from week 4 to week 12 or whatever? So, I mean, there's a lot of things and variables that I don't know the answer to, and I'm not sure everybody else has the answers yet because the Texas OU deal is so new. And it did take people by surprise.
Bobby, last one from me. There's been a lot of talk about how the SEC will be organized now. Are you a fan of staying east-west and just going with an 8 and an 8, or do you like this four-team pod idea? How do you think it could shake out?
I like the pod system because I think that I do like that because I would – obviously I want Texas to play, A&M, OU, and Arkansas every year, maybe LSU every other year or something like that. I mean, you can figure that out. But within the pod system of four groups of four, and then segmented into divisions east and west, you could play a round robin of your four teams and then two of the other local pod and then rotate one more game or two more games across the other two pods so that you actually are playing every single SEC school once every 4 years, at least. Yeah. So that to me makes a lot of sense. Of course, there are other people that might schedule it different and think differently. I will say this. I think some of that's been floated potentially, but I don't know that even is agreed upon yet at any level within the SEC or at Texas, although there's been some discussion.
One more question, Bobby, because we do still have an upcoming college football season to play before Texas and Oklahoma may end up in the SEC. What do you think the ceiling and the floor is for Texas football as things stand right now on July 27th, less than a week before fall practice gets going?
I think the ceiling is 10 or 11 wins. I think they've got enough talent. They've got a defensive front that's legit. They've got some depth and talent on the offensive line. Is it great yet? I don't know. But Bijan Robinson is a great player. He's the best running back since Jamal or Cedric or Ricky, right? And I just think back to Mack Brown's first season at Texas. And I think Texas, they go 10-3 and won the Cotton Bowl over Mississippi State. I mean, Bijan Robinson's a fantastic talent, and this is Sarkisian's first year. He's an offensive guy, and he's got a piece that not many people will have in Robinson. So as long as he stays healthy, they find a quarterback that can play, I think that Texas could easily win 10 or 11 games this year if everything falls right. If everything doesn't fall right, if they have problems adapting to a new defensive scheme, if they get tripped up by, Louisiana Lafayette or at Arkansas, I could see easy 6 or 7 wins instead. So I think there's a wide gap this year of what's, to your point, floor and ceiling. I think it's really wide this year. I don't think it's like 7-9. I think it's 11-7 or 11-6.
Well, I'll tell you this. You got a whole bunch of fan bases now paying attention from the SEC. You go slip in Fayetteville, they might throw you through that floor. They'll be upset at that point. Because that's going to be a whole other part of this season, Bobby, is, well, would that work in the SEC? Is that going to be good enough for the SEC? That's going to be a whole part of it for Texas. If you're following the Longhorns, check out InsideTexas.com for all the recruiting stuff, all the latest on this developing story. Texas and Oklahoma have now officially asked the SEC if they can come play in that conference. Crazy stuff. Bobby, we appreciate the time, man. Have a great week.
You too, Chad and Trey. Y'all be good.
Thanks, Bobby.
Good stuff as always, man. One of the legends in the business. He's been doing this a long time. And now, interesting first answer there where he said, no, based on what's been happening, I'm not surprised that I'm now dealing with this and Texas and the SEC. Trey, those that know this world, they've been kind of seeing this in a way, seeing the change coming and knowing that Texas was going to have to make some kind of move. And just, I think there's, for many of us, we just didn't think it was this particular move. But the more it goes on, the more you realize the other stuff, it started to make more and more sense when you think about it.
We knew something would happen eventually. For it to happen as quickly as it has, though, has shocked everybody. Yep. I have not heard, even Bobby, who was like, yeah, this doesn't surprise me all that much. The timing of it, if nothing else, had to have been a bit abrasive.
And that's the I think that's what ultimately got like Ross Bjork to freak out. Deep down, they probably had a little discussion of, there'd been rumblings about Oklahoma for years. Maybe there'd been some discussions among ADs, but the idea that it was, oh my God, it could happen in a couple of weeks. Did you see the Chronicle story? It's like, whoa, what? And then all that came
did
out.
Did I see the Chronicle story? I fed Brent the information.
And then all that could come out of his mouth was, we like being the only. Oh, geez. Okay. And then things had to be walked back after that. But we've got some meetings coming this week, and maybe the SEC will vote this week. I'm sure we'll get word on that pretty soon. Keep it right here. We'll keep you updated. Up next, why July 27th matters, including one of the great foods of all time. And we'll get you some stems and seeds before we get out of here. Simone Biles deciding she's done in the middle of competition. That's been a part of today. And of course, the Texas-Oklahoma stuff and Aaron Rodgers reporting to camp. We'll try to hit as much as we can here on the Horn.
Shirts and skins.
If they just played this and left the stage, but that's a whole other story. Trey, tell them why you're playing the Peppers.
Maybe the most entertaining story of the entire Woodstock 99 documentary involved Red Hot Chili Peppers. You're just going to have to find out about that story by watching the documentary. Before doing that, check out my conversation with the filmmaker, Garrett Price, who is also a UT alum and a guy that I knew back in the day. He talks all about the making of this excellent new HBO Max documentary, Woodstock 99. You can hear our conversation at booksonpod.com.
Lots of good stuff out there right now. Check out booksonpod.com. Check out hornfm.com. Also, Trey, there's a series on Vice now. They've gone from Dark Side of the Ring to Dark Side of Football and now Dark Side of the 90s. So there's a documentary specifically focused on that decade. The one on the Viper Room. You should check that one out.
Oh, with River Phoenix?
Even if you don't watch any of the rest, watch the one on the Viper Room. I didn't know the history of the full history of the Viper Room, how it got started, who bought it. I never understood the story of it. They tell some really wild stories. They have a couple people kind of, you know, filling in some stories, and River is a big part of it. So
okay.
It's an interesting documentary there. But the Woodstock 99, man, that's I've probably seen it now once and a half. Mm. I probably watched another 30, 40 minutes of it. It's just so good. It is such an incredible story and almost kind of hard to believe it all happened, that it all crashed together in that way.
Yeah.
But it's cool, and I'm glad to hear that there's a local guy that produced that, and a guy that you knew. Look at that. You were brushing shoulders with greatness even back then. You had no idea.
Well, he was an RTF student, and when I talked to him, I'd forgotten that. I'm like, had you always wanted to make movies? He's like, well, yeah, I went to RTF school, and as soon as he said that, I was like, you idiots. Of course he did that. You were just too drunk back then to remember.
That's great. Drunk Trey did not remember.
Drunk fat Trey did not remember.
Oh, my goodness. We hope you are remembering all of this Tuesday. If you're a Longhorn fan or a Sooner fan or an Aggie fan, for that matter, or any fan in the SEC, you got to remember today. It's not official yet, but Texas and Oklahoma have asked for entrance into the conference. Now the SEC's got to get together and vote. Trey, before we get to why today matters, give me your thoughts on Bobby Burton's stance on the voting situation. He's saying A&M stands to gain too much. They should vote yes.
ultimately, I agree with him. I wouldn't blame them if they voted no, but I think at this point they will vote yes.
Because you get the money either way.
Right.
It's not like your vote's going to, unless you really thought your vote could convince three others.
Because at this point, it's about growing up and understanding, look, this is happening, so we can either go along with it. We voiced our objections, so at this point we can go along with it, or we can continue to look like, you know, whiny little bees. To put it bluntly.
I wonder what was discussed yesterday in the AD meeting and what will be discussed this week in a chancellor-president setting. Will there be some opportunity for A&M and the SEC to have a little back and forth, have a little interaction, and then have the Aggies feel like what you just said, feel like they've been heard, feel like, okay, all right, we kind of understand our placing in this thing now, and we'll move on and vote yes? Or are they going to kind of just stay there with the heels in the dirt thinking, you know what, we'll play whoever you tell us to play because we agreed that you're the conference, but we're gonna stand on this principle one time and we'll go down in history as the team that voted against this and then we'll go ahead and play them, but we've got to make this move. I feel like that may be where they're leaning.
If you could cast the vote for A&M, how would you vote?
Oh man. Golly, there's like politically, there's no way to vote no, but and try to fully explain your no. You know what I mean? There's no way to go no, but.
No, there is a way to vote like that.
How's that?
It's to be absent on the day of the vote.
The in absentia or yeah. Whatever. I think
the no vote, present vote. I vote present. Voting yes, I'm not voting no, I'm voting present.
If you have somebody in your group that honestly believes that you were given some kind of assurance back in the day, I understand things have changed. I get that. I think there would be some kind of statement. It's either an absent or a no based on the principle. With every intent on play. Again, you know me, I love the game. I want the game to be played. It'll be painted as fear.
Mm-hmm.
It will be painted as you're afraid somehow to play the game. That's not it. You'd be voting no on a principle. So to me, in this day and age of society and social media, I mean, honestly, the Aggies can't win in social media. So I'd say do what is in your soul, and I think what's in their soul is to vote no.
Added bonus, if you're the one SEC school to vote no. Any guesses?
Added bonus. Oh, you mean
for A&M? If you're the one school that votes no,
like you think, is it a bonus for A&M?
Yes.
No, but I think everybody else could understand it if they're the only one. That would tell you that nobody else has snarky feelings. It's just about the Aggies being told years ago, you're the only one we want.
I have the added bonus.
Okay,
get to put it on the side of Kyle Field.
Shut up. I should have known. I should have known you were cooking up to something. I should have known. You were just setting me up the whole time.
I love having a serious conversation right until the last 5 seconds, Chad. You know me better than that.
How dare you? All right, let's have a chicken strip conversation. Let's get serious here.
Why today matters.
Why today matters. July 27th is the day. It is National Chicken Tenders Day, Chicken Fingers Day, whatever you want to say. Trey, when you chicken tender. What is your favorite sauce? What is your go-to?
Oh, well.
You can have anything you want. What do you want?
I guess at this point, I have to admit that I almost never chicken finger. When I do, it's Lane's. That's the exception I make. It's like my hot dog rule. I will not eat hot dogs unless I'm in San Francisco.
Okay.
I will not eat chicken fingers unless it's the Lane's chicken finger. And at that point, you're going Lane's sauce.
With their sauce, yeah.
But generally speaking, if I had the choice of the condiments in my refrigerator, I'd either go yellow mustard or chimichurri.
Wow. Okay. Slightly fancy on one and just yellow mustard works on. I haven't done too much yellow mustard on the chicken tenders, but it could work.
My kids,
yeah.
In part because they love it and part because they just love to spite me with their condiment selection, would go ketchup every time.
Oh, yeah. It could be good. It could be good. I've done plenty of ketchup on chicken tenders. Nothing wrong with that. Used to do ketchup on fish sticks, too.
I've seen that before.
Used to hammer that down all the time. For chicken tenders, I go, if I have a variety, I go some sort of honey mustard. I'll go barbecue sauce.
Good one.
And then ranch is great with everything for me. I'm a ranch guy, so I'll do ranch on chicken tenders too.
When you would go chicken nuggets, I know it's not quite the chicken finger. When you would go chicken nuggets with at McDonald's,
yeah,
and you had the option of the three sauces. It was three sauces, right?
In the original run was three sauces.
Sweet and sour, hot mustard, or the barbecue.
Uh-huh.
Which would you go?
If I had to choose one, it's barbecue.
Hot mustard every time for me.
Go hot mustard?
Yeah.
I contend as a barbecue sauce fan that there's no barbecue sauce on earth that tastes exactly like McDonald's barbecue sauce with a nugget.
Hmm.
I don't know if it's the best taste ever. It is the most unique tasting barbecue sauce. I've never tasted another one that tastes exactly like it.
I'm trying to remember, because I'd definitely eaten that barbecue sauce before. Wasn't it like really smoky?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I think that's
sweet,
that's fair.
And smoky at the same time.
I marvel at the chicken McNuggets because of how consistent they have been since 1984 or whenever they were born. And I don't always mean that as a total compliment. They have not changed them at all.
Mm.
Like they claim to have, but I don't believe it's true.
Mm.
I don't believe there's anything about them that are different. They taste exactly the same to me, and they are still consistently loved by tons of people.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, that is a staple, but I think that when people are talking about their favorite chicken tender, chicken nugget type product out there in the fast food world, the McDonald's Chicken McNugget does not get nearly as much love as plenty of other things.
Well, because other things to me have passed it up, because that world got, you know, Chick-fil-A does a hell of a job.
Right.
Wendy's does a pretty good job. Even Burger King's, I think, at times can hang out with the McNugget.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
McDonald's may need to rethink the Chicken McNugget then if Burger King has caught up with them.
Do you know who just got to the Nuggets, though? Have you heard who's got Nuggets now?
Taco Bell.
Arby's.
Yeah.
Hey, they have the meats. Now they've got chicken. Come on, man.
Yeah, they do have the meats that they bring into the restaurant just packaged up.
How dare you?
Sitting in some unknown liquid.
How dare you? Gonna rip on Arby's? Come on, man.
Oh, I'm not the only one ripping on Arby's in this day and age. There are plenty of other people.
All of you out there ripping on the Arby's or ripping on the Jack in the Box, y'all need to just step back and get out of the way.
I will always give Arby's credit for one of the most entertaining displays of gluttony that I've ever encouraged and gotten to witness.
What's that?
I bet a buddy in college, again, during fat drunk tray days, but this wasn't me that was consuming. My buddy was like being so braggadocious about how many Arby's roast beef sandwiches he could eat. I was like, there's no way you could eat 10 Arby's roast beef sandwiches in one sitting. This is back when they were 5 for $5.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, no problem. I'm like, all right, I'll buy them. And the bet is, if you eat all 10, then I will just have paid for the sandwiches.
Is it? And you weren't even paying him?
And if he
was just breaking even?
And if you don't finish all 10, then you have to pay me back.
Wow.
And he was going, I mean, he was hammering them down through about 6. At 6.5, so sandwich number 7, he hit a wall,
wow.
Finishes 7, starts eating 8, gets about a quarter of the way through 8, and then gets up and goes and pukes in the toilet. So I won the bet right there. I didn't make him pay me back because the $10 was worth it for that entertainment.
Did you throw a time limit on it, or did you just say one sitting?
No.
How did you define one sitting?
He was being cocky about it. You know, he's like that, I'm guessing, a marathoner who thinks that they're going to beat everybody so badly. They just get off to a quick start from the beginning, like a half mile ahead from everybody, and all of a sudden, at, you know, mile 20, they're puking on the side as everybody passes them up.
Dude, I respect that roast beef so much, and I know what all that bread would do to me. Like, I know I could get 3 in and have just a confident glow about me. I think I can handle 5, but 10? 10 is another world.
Do you really respect the roast beef that much, by the way?
I'm saying I respect what it does to my body.
Okay.
I respect what it is to eat that stuff, right? I know what it means to eat Arby's. You can't have a lot of plans the rest of the day. But I know what that 8th sandwich would represent. Like, if I somehow got through 7, the 8th one, I think, is the one that would absolutely bludgeon me.
Certain foods that I could eat a lot of to the point of being on the verge of puking. Like, I think that I could eat a lot of pizza for my size.
Yeah.
Find another 170-pound guy who's 6 feet tall. I could probably come close to out-eating just about anybody. Roast beef sandwiches, though, from Arby's.
Ooh.
I'm probably done at 1 or 2.
That's heavy duty, bro. Heavy duty. All right, that's why today matters to us. Get out there and have some chicken tenders and maybe try the nuggets at Arby's. Up next, stems and seeds, including why look who showed up to training camp. Yep, it's that guy. We'll talk about it on the horn.
Shirts and skins.
I am not the biggest fan of The Offspring, but this song is really good, and it was the perfect song to end the Woodstock 99 documentary, too.
It's a great build at the beginning of that song.
Yeah.
They're one of the bands I don't think gets quite enough credit sometimes.
So there are a lot of people who feel the same way you do about them, and Dexter Holland, the lead singer who took part in the documentary, he is a PhD molecular biologist.
Is he really?
Yeah, he got that degree from somewhere in California like a decade ago. Those punk rock guys, man, they've got an extra gear intellectually.
I love it. All right, tell them about the podcast.
So the podcast is Books on Pod, of course. You know that by now. Newest episode is with Garrett Price. He is the director of Woodstock 99, the new documentary on HBO Max. It's all about the craziness that ensued at Woodstock 1999. It was a cluster F. Garrett is not only the director of this film, he's also a Texas X. He graduated in the early part of this century. I actually knew the guy back in the day. We were friends, shared beers, shared the occasional hit of cannabis as well, and now he's doing great things out in Hollywood. You can check out our conversation at booksonpod.com and check out the film at HBO Max.
It is a fascinating documentary on multiple levels, music, culturally, just all of it. It's really, really good. I'm so glad you got to talk to the director and find out a little bit more about him, and kind of cool that he is a local product in a way. All right, so before we get out of here, let's go stems and seeds because this man came to camp. Come on now. No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks. Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. His name is Aaron Rodgers, and he did show up with a G on his helmet. Why am I smiling as I say that? I'm a Cowboys fan and a Bucks fan, and that's not good news for the rest of the NFC. Trey, I'm smiling because he's one of the best. I love watching him work, and I just think the NFL's better with him in it. I want him to play. I don't want that talent to stand off and brood and hang out with his, you know, soon-to-be actress wife. I want the dude to throw footballs. So that's why I'm happy today.
And all Green Bay had to do to make this happen was agree to trade for Randall Cobb, restructure his contract to let him out of that deal after this year, and apparently we're going to have a hologram of Vince Lombardi on the sidelines this year instead of LaFleur.
And don't forget mechanisms. There are mechanisms in place.
The hologram is part of the mechanism.
That's a mechanism to address his issues. That'd be great. Each game, there'll be a different former Packer coach projected onto the field via hologram on top of LaFleur.
Yeah.
So that he won't look like Matt LaFleur. That's what Aaron Rodgers wants.
It's going to be really weird when Green Bay and Dallas get together. And it's Mike McCarthy, who Aaron Rodgers also ran out of town.
Good point. Yeah, that'll be weird. Hologram Mike McCarthy meets up with real Mike McCarthy. It's going to be strange. But he is a big part of the NFL. And now, again, the NFC is on notice a little bit. Not that they're the favorite, but they certainly are something you got to pay attention to. Remember, they hosted the NFC title game last year, so that is still a team worth talking about. We've, of course, talked about Texas and Oklahoma today officially requesting entrance into the SEC. What would it mean to you, Trey, if we find out that the vote is something to 2 or to 3? Like Texas and OU still get in, but there's a couple other schools that go along with A&M. Let's say A&M votes no as well.
I think it would mean that Missouri and maybe a South Carolina voted no.
Okay. The newer members.
Kentucky, maybe. I'm just trying to think of what that third school would be. It's not going to be Arkansas. Arkansas is licking their chops at getting to go against Texas at least 2 out of every 4 years, if not every year going forward.
Dude, this is so wild for Texas. They would come in. You've obviously been carrying your one rival for years now, for the 9 years. You get back 2 of your historic rivals from Southwest Conference days. You keep the one rival that you ultimately hold the most dear. And then pretty much every other game you play in conference, they'll just hate you out of principle.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's who you guys are.
Yeah, we're used to that. We may as well have a little bit of say-so in the rivalry too, right?
Sure.
Like, yeah. It's better Arkansas. I mean, if we're going to be dealing with hillbilly rivals, it's better Arkansas than it was West Virginia.
Do you remember the Arkansas stuff? Like, are you old enough? How old would you have been when it stopped?
You know, it's funny. My memories of the Arkansas rivalry, the animosity that I feel towards that rivalry, are more about what was happening on the basketball court than the football field.
Okay. But you feel that one. That's a rivalry to you?
Oh, no question.
Okay. So for you, OU, Arkansas and A&M, those are rivals to you.
Yeah, I mean,
no
doubt. If that's the mini division, that's going to be brutal for all four schools. Let's be honest.
Dude.
Oklahoma's going to handle it the easiest, but those other three schools are going to be in a dogfight each and every year.
Was it you and Bucky that Tyler McComas was on with when he said Oklahoma's never played Arkansas in a game in regular season?
Yes.
I about passed out in my car.
It made no sense.
Like, wait a minute. Those two have never gotten together? The Pig Suey and the Boomer Sooner have never been in the same house before?
I don't know why I didn't think to look this up until now, but I wonder if they've actually met up in a bowl game.
Maybe. I feel like there's been a bowl game in my life where they played each other.
Yeah, him saying that
a mid-level
lends itself to this idea that they've met at like the Bluebonnet Bowl back in the
day. Yeah, not
or
a monster. I don't think they met in a monster bowl. I think they met in a smaller bowl game. That would be a hell of a pod if that's what it's going to be. All right, that wraps up a Tuesday show. Thanks to Jeff Ward, as always, for jumping in with us. We'll get that one thrown up on the podcast for you later on today, as well as the Bobby Burton interview. Some interesting stuff from Bobby from Inside Texas on this reaction of Texas and Oklahoma. Back for a Wednesday show tomorrow. Coming up, we've got the triple option for you. Longhorn Blitz at 7 o'clock tonight. And don't forget, tomorrow, special interview at 12:30. We'll talk to Tyler Campbell about this event he's got where his dad, the legendary Earl Campbell, will be there. And they'll be talking about people that have MS, just like our man Tyler Campbell does. We'll talk to him about all that tomorrow at 12:30. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Stay safe out there, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Cheers!